Blog Talk Radio.
Game time, fellas.
College football playoff. You know the strongest team wins.
You know what else the strongest win in college? Trophies.
I won that trophy, too.
Oh, I think I got one of those, too.
What an accomplishment.
Get stronger. AT&T's network now has the nation's strongest LTE signal.
The Denver Broncos are done.
From the battlefields of the NFL to the war for Europe's soul and waiting for tonight's National College Football Championship, while broadcasting from a green and yellow plywood duck blind. Good morning, folks. And it has been a very eventful week. You're listening to Kelly O'Connell here, AM 1450, KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show, Las Cruces, New Mexico. And, all right, so if you're a football fan, this weekend has got to be, you've got to be in heaven. Because we've got the quarterfinals, which produce some surprises, and now we've got the national championship tonight, and it's a national championship that you could argue is unlike any in the history of the game. Of course, being a graduate of Oregon, I'm a slightly biased here, but I'd like to see a good game either way. Now, Oregon has lost its top receiver again, so who knows what's going to happen tonight. All right, I've got some stories for you, just a few headlines, just a little something to nibble on here. But first, let me give you a just thinking, opening essay here at 6:07 on the 12th of January, 2015. If the world does not stand up to radical Islam, then the West goes away and the earth will not be worth living on. But if we do decide to stand up, we must challenge all of our presuppositions and reconfigure what it means to be religious and a citizen and an American. Are we ready for this challenge? Our very lives depend upon it. 523-1450 if you have a comment on that. Now, going to the Drudge to see what the headlines are, just a little taste here for you. Quotation from the world's leaders, "We can live together." Netanyahu and Abbas attended the Paris mass rally. That's interesting. Largest in French history. Kiss off, U.S. representative represented only by an ambassador. Officials skipped Washington Charlie rally too. Jake Tapper, "I'm ashamed." John Kerry is quibbling. Gunman appears in chilling video, declares loyalty to Islamic State. I've got that video for you. Wire, both brothers had weapons training in Yemen. Afghanistan rally hails attackers as heroes, of course. Feinstein terrorist sleeper cells are in USA. I've got that for you. FBI assuming larger surveillance role. The main headline, Obama, finally invisible, you let the world down, and this is from the New York Daily News. There were no prominent Americans at this French protest rally against radical Islam. Now, of course, you can be any level of a Obama supporter, but what exactly is America communicating to Europe by not attending this mass rally that had millions of people and apparently 3.5-4 million people, from what I understand? There is a problem with having one person rule, with having one person decide what's good and what's bad. And I think it would be within our tradition to attend something like this. That pretty much goes without saying, doesn't it? All right, let's go to Indy's latest step forward. Indianapolis played. Well, actually, you know, we've got four different games, and well, let me hit Indianapolis first. I've got them queued up here.
The Denver Broncos are done. They are out. They do not look good today at home.
Of all the home teams to lose today or this weekend, you didn't expect it would be the Broncos. I mean, it's no disrespect to the Indianapolis Colts, but so many question marks, especially along the offensive line. Andrew Luck is without a doubt one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But to see the way this Colts defense got after Peyton Manning and the way Manning played, that is very surprising.
It almost feels like there was something more wrong.
Who knows? Maybe he wasn't 100% healthy. Maybe he's too old. Maybe it's both. But here we go. From Denver. And it started well for the Broncos. Manning to Julius Thomas, who's battled some injury problems in the latter half of the season, puts them in fine position, and that sets up Demaryius Thomas. Thomas's fifth straight playoff game with a touchdown, and it's 7-0 Broncos. Second quarter, Boom Heron. 6-yard touchdown. Watch him dive on that left shoulder. He was battling an injury, a shoulder problem, throughout this afternoon, but he ties the game at 7. Now, the Colts rush 6 for the first time in the game, and Manning is hit, and he fumbles. Jarrell Freeman pounces on it, and the Colts are in business. Jonathan Newsom goes untouched and forces the turnover. That sets up this. Andrew Luck to his tight end, Dwayne Allen. In between a couple of defenders, 14-7 Indianapolis. Now, right before the half, third and long, Colts backed up near their end zone. Luck. People talk about Russell Wilson, Cam Newton's mobility. Andrew Luck, he can throw on the run. But this is a pass he would like back. Intercepted by Bradley Roby, led to a Broncos field goal. Broncos were down 14-10 at the break. Third quarter, Kobe Fleener. Tough catch in traffic. Three plays later, when you think of touchdowns, think of Akeem. Akeem Nix. Ooh, that's a rope. 21-10, Colts. Now it's 24-13. Fourth and eight. This is a ball game for the Broncos. To C.J. Anderson, he took a step back to try to elude tacklers. Maybe that cost him, but he definitely comes up just a couple of inches short. John Fox challenged the spot. He had no choice. The ruling was upheld, and that's it. The Indianapolis Colts go into Denver, and they end the Broncos season. It will be the Colts and the Patriots in Foxborough next week in the AFC Championship game. Andrew Luck, 265 yards, a couple of touchdowns, two picks. But look at Manning's numbers. He threw it 46 times. He wasn't picked off, only threw for 211 yards. C.J. Anderson, 19 carries and 91 yards.
That was an interesting game. I don't blame Manning at all. At the same time,
college
Manning did not.
Playoff.
It would look like a shadow of himself. You know,
you're also strongest win in college.
I think,
trophy.
I don't know, if you'd
I
seen
won
the game,
too.
You would have had to have concluded, if you did see the game, that Manning was injured or he was just over the hill. He looks really old out there, and I hate to say that because, you know, it seems like he's old. It could be all the injuries and all the hits he's taken, but it doesn't seem like Brady looks as old or maybe feels as old as I mean, it seems like Brady is in his prime. Okay, and speaking of which, I do have, well, let me do the Seahawks and Panthers. It looked like the Panthers early on were going to challenge the Seahawks, but the Seahawks are so muscular, it's just unbelievable. And that their safety is like something from a mythological, you know, fairy tale. I mean, this guy is like, I don't know, half man, half beast. Here we go, Cam Chancellor.
Seahawks trying to become the first defending champ to win a playoff game since the Patriots way back in the mid-2000s, 2005. And, well, Russell Wilson, man, he's got some unbelievable touch to Doug Baldwin. Seahawks up 7-0. Watch as he shuffle steps right past his defender. Second quarter. Panthers down 7-0, third and six. Oh, nice pass from Newton to Kelvin Benjamin. 7-yard touchdown. We've got a ball game early. Didn't think we'd see touchdowns on back-to-back-to-back drives in this game, but we got it. When Jermaine Kearse makes the one-handed grab and gets to the pylon for the 63-yard score. Some in the newsroom when we were watching this game said, you know what, that should have been offensive pass interference. He kind of pushed off a little bit, but benefit of the doubt, going to the offensive player, got the ball on top of the pylon. Robert Flores and Coach Herm Edwards say, no, not offensive pass interference. Wow, this was crazy. End of the first half, Carolina was going for a field goal. Cam Chancellor, from behind the line of scrimmage, jumps over everybody, somehow didn't block the kick. Didn't matter because a false start was called on the Panthers. So they'll kick it again. They got to account for him, right? Well, they don't. Same thing. And he missed it again. Not only did he miss the ball, but the Panthers, Graham Gano, missed the field goal. So since Chancellor didn't make contact with the ball, running into the kicker is called. And Gano's going to get another chance at this 40-yard field goal attempt. You see Chancellor, this time, he doesn't even come. I think he was out of breath. It's third and 10. Wilson to Wilson. This Wilson has two L's and 6 points. 24-10. 6 minutes to go. Newton looking for Ed Dixon, but Chancellor picks it off. And 90 yards the other way in front of the 12th man, who will get another game. Will it be against the Packers or the Cowboys? Repeat, Chancellor. Man, he made some huge hits in this game and makes the game-clinching pick six. Panthers scored a late touchdown. Did not matter. 31-17. Seahawks now 10-2 all time at home in the postseason.
All right, so let's take a little break here. I got a couple more NFL games to go over with you. It's 6-18, 5-2-3, 14-50. Who are you picking to be in this Super Bowl, and who are you picking to win? I couldn't find my text machine this morning, but I'll go off on break and see what I can find. Sun Volt, we're listening to alternative country this month. Sun Volt is one of the most important alternative country, alt country bands. This is Windfall from Austin City Limits 1996 live. And anyway, Kelly O'Connell here. The number to call in, 523-1450. We'll be right back at 6:19 on the button. It is Kelly here. Good morning. It's 6:24. And let me get a little bit of weather here for you. But before we go into those two other games, anyways, I thought it was pretty good football. I know it's the playoff, and by definition, it is good football, but I thought it was pretty well. There were a few surprises. And let me go ahead and let me play another game here for you, and I'll give you some weather right after that. Here is this is a great game. This is an absolutely fantastic game. The Ravens versus the Patriots, one of the best games I've ever seen played. There was some controversy in it as well. But here is your...
A classic showdown in Foxborough between Joe Flacco and the Ravens, taking on Tom Brady and the Patriots in the divisional round. First quarter, Ravens up a score. Flacco finds Steve Smith over the middle in the end zone for the touchdown. Ravens built up a 14-0 lead, but here comes Brady and company. Plenty of time. Airs it down the middle to tight end Rob Gronkowski. 46 yards for the big fella on that play. And then four plays later, Brady doesn't have any options. So you know what? Takes himself in for the four-yard touchdown run as the Pats cut the deficit down by one score. Under four to play in the second then. Brady tosses it to Danny Amendola, breaks one tackle, and dives in for the touchdown. Check it out again. Avoiding a couple of tacklers, stays in bounds. Great play on the touchdown as the Patriots tied up at 14 apiece. Third quarter, Ravens up by 7 on fourth down. Flacco goes deep to the air. Torrey Smith comes up with a beautiful catch inside the 5. Ravens would eventually score on a Justin Forsett. Touchdown, Ravens up 28-14. Third quarter still, Brady to Julian Edelman, who throws it to Amendola. He goes in for the score, ties it up at 28. Drama then in the fourth. Again on fourth down, Flacco. The short pass to fullback Kyle Juszczyk for the first down. Ravens would go ahead with the field goal, making a 31-28 score. Later in the quarter, Brady answers. The beautiful pass to Brandon LaFell for the touchdown as Brady, now the all-time leader in postseason touchdown passes, surpassing Joe Montana. The lead was 4, but Flacco and company trying to make one last go of it. The drop-back pass to Torrey Smith, but it's picked off in the end zone, and the Patriots come away with the victory 35-31, heading to their fourth straight AFC championship game.
I'm telling you right now, that was a great game. It was a great game because there were two changes of lead. And at some point you're thinking, okay, Tom Brady has never overcome more than 11 points in the playoffs to win. He's overcome 14 now. The Ravens go ahead 14 more points, and you're thinking, is it possible? Is it even possible that he could do it again? And he did it again. Now, there was some controversy having to do with trying to multitask here, which I have absolutely no ability to do, but they're able to overcome this double deficit. But the issue was they had 6 eligible receivers in the game, but only 5 of them were available on a play. And so they put these 6 in, and according to the Ravens, they did not tell in time the opposing side which receiver was not eligible, so that therefore the defensive backs didn't know how to cover. Now, my response to that is, the response from Tom Brady, of course, was, why don't you go learn the rules, fair or not? But what I don't understand is, why not just cover all 6 of them and see what happens? I mean, to me, that's not what happened in the game. The great play in the game was this guy, Julian Edelman, who's this little, he's like 5'9", 5'10", running back, or wide receiver, pardon me, for the Patriots, has done just a remarkable job all year and would have had 1,000 yards receiving if he hadn't gotten a concussion. And anyway, he was a quarterback at Kent State. He's a running quarterback. But Tom Brady threw a lateral back to him, and then Danny Amendola, who's another short white guy, is sprinting up the sideline. Edelman takes the ball and throws it for the first time in his career, and it's like a 50-yard touchdown. It was spectacular. And you saw Joe Flacco, the quarterback for the Ravens, playing, and you thought, you know what? This guy's got ice water in his veins. He's not going to lose. And it was one of those games that if it had gone on for another quarter, who knows what would have happened. But because certainly the Ravens were worthy to win that game. Now, here is the Cowboys and the Packers. Spectacular football. And nobody could watch this game and criticize Romo ever again, I don't think. Here we go.
Aaron Rodgers and the Packers hosting Tony Romo and the Cowboys in an NFC playoff matchup. Packers undefeated at home. Cowboys undefeated on the road. First quarter, no score. Third and goal. Rodgers scrambles and finds Andrew Corliss in the back of the end zone. Packers up 7-0 early.
It also needs to be mentioned that Aaron Rodgers had a bad calf, and you could see through the whole game he was limping. So that just only heightened the drama. And also, it meant that he couldn't scramble, and he couldn't really plant his foot to throw like he normally does. So you almost felt like it was the Cowboys' day.
Second quarter, game tied at 7. Romo to Terrence Williams. And Williams makes a defender miss, and he goes 38 yards to the house. First time the Packers have trailed at home since week 2. They are down 14-7. Third quarter, Romo hands it off to DeMarco Murray, and he fumbles the ball. Murray, six fumble this season. Packers would kick a field goal to cut the lead to 14-13, but Murray would redeem himself. Takes it outside all the way down to the one-yard line to set it up first and goal. He would score on a one-yard run the next play. Cowboys up 21-13. But the Packers respond. Rodgers to Davante Adams. And Adams scores from 46 yards out. Packers cut the lead to 21-20. Fourth quarter, more from Rodgers to Richard Rodgers. And that's a touchdown. Third TD pass of the day for Aaron Rodgers. They take a 26-21 lead. Later in the quarter, same score, fourth and two on the Cowboys' 32-yard line. Romo up to Dez Bryant. Crazy catch. Play would be reviewed. They'll take another look. The ball seems to come out as Bryant falls to the ground, ruled an incomplete pass. Bryant can't believe it. Packers would get the ball. Later in the quarter, same score. A first down would seal the deal. Rodgers. It's Randall Cobb who makes the catch. Packers going to win 26-21.
It was an unbelievable game, and it went
time,
off
fellas.
Of that
college football playoff. You know, the strongest team wins.
You know, who else the strongest win in college?
Throw trophy. Down to.
I won that trophy too.
It was a throw that went down to Dez Bryant, who's considered and has the numbers to prove that he's one of the great receivers of all time. He goes up high in the air over the defender.
Now
he gets the ball. He comes down. He tries to, at the same time, bring it into the end zone. But when he comes down, the ball hits the ground. It's in his hands, but it also hits the ground at the same time and pops up a little bit. And the argument was basically that the ball was never caught, they never made a football move, whatever you want to decide that is. And, all right, so that was the play of the game, and I want to play it for you because I know there's a lot of Cowboy fans out there, and please pardon me for you listeners who are not Cowboy fans or not into the NFL. This was just an extremely dynamic play. It was a long bomb, or at least a kind of a medium-range bomb, but it was on fourth and two. Romo puts it up where it could be caught. Now, arguably, if Dez Bryant gets the ball and just hugs it to his chest, it's a catch. As he's coming down, he tries to kind of come down and kind of lay himself out over the end zone, which is appropriate. But as he's doing it, he also comes down to the ground. The ball does pop loose. But I was talking to my buddy Jeff, who's on the other station, and he said he thought it was a fumble that was then recovered. But unbelievable. Here's a little bit of that. And hold on a second. I am having a little, let's see, let me get the other clip here. Having a hard time hearing this thing. Let me go to some folks. Let me take a little break here. Make sure my equipment is working. Here's a little more Sunbolt Windfall. Kelly O'Connell, 6:35. I'll get you that clip. I just got to make sure everything's lined up. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450. If you feel ripped off, feel free to call in. All right, folks, here is a statement they're interviewing Dez Bryant, who's obviously very upset, but he explains what happened on the play. And this is the play that was overturned that you could argue cost the game for the Cowboys. Now, if you do argue that, you got to go back to the game before and look at the call, the interference call that was taken away from the Lions that could have cost them the game, arguably. So, you know, the hand of fortune gives and then takes away. So, and I don't think that anybody can then say the league is biased for the Cowboys because they would have never let this be reversed. If you see what I mean, if some people are conspiracy theorists on this stuff, check this out. Des Bryant.
You seen what everybody else seen. I ain't never seen nothing like it. Never seen nothing like it.
You were sure that you made the catch?
I was sure. I tried to reach for the goal line.
What was your level of disbelief when the call was overturned?
I don't even understand why it was even a challenge.
They said that in that situation you have to maintain possession of the ball.
I didn't. I took three steps. You seen that, right?
It looked like a catch by the rule, I guess.
Have you ever seen that rule before?
Kevin Johnson.
No. It wasn't like that. I'm reaching for the touchdown. I'm trying to score.
Trying to
break the play.
Did you think when you brought it in and then crossed the goal, I mean, that was basically what you were making a football move, essentially that what made the catch?
Yeah, I caught it. Yeah. I caught it. I came down with it and tried to reach for the goal line.
Okay. How frustrating is it to have this game end on that type of call?
I can't believe it. That's all I can say. I can't believe it. I've never seen nothing like that in my life. I don't want to. Next week, I really hope it's not we made a bad call. I don't want to hear none of that. Just let it be, whatever it is.
Can you just one time take us through the moment the ball's in the air and you go up for it with shield?
I knew it was mine.
What was the play? I mean, and you describe, like, I mean, it was Tony going to you and the whole time.
We got the coverage we wanted, and we made the play.
How hard is it to believe that on one play, one decision like that determines whether your season's over or you go to the NFC Championship?
I just can't believe it. That's all I can say. I can't believe it. I never seen anything like that. I never ever seen nothing like that in my life.
What's it like in here? When you first got in, what's it like?
Same thing, you know. And we worked our butts off, man. It was a strong, passionate team, man. We're going to keep our heads out. We're going to keep moving forward. Try to learn from this.
Considering when you made the catch, did you think that this was, you know, destiny in some ways because the way the game played out? I mean,
you got Aaron Rodgers on the other side. It just put us in good position. It put us in good position. You know, us scoring that touchdown put us in good position. So, you know.
So you believe you clearly made the catch,
guys,
and
guys, make
lost
way, guys.
The ball only
make way,
when you
make
were
way, guys.
Extending it with one hand to reach for the goal line.
Clearly it's a catch. Clearly it's a catch. That's no question, man.
Well, I mean, you heard the disappointment. Anybody would be disappointed. I would say
at Synchrony Financial, we're the largest provider of private label credit cards in the U.S. With over 80 years of experience and deep industry expertise, we work with businesses across the country to put the right
people in place. This is not to point any fingers, but anybody would, if they caught a ball in that situation,
banking, loyalty, analytics.
As a touchdown, but on the other hand,
engage with
he
us.
Comes down and just secures the ball. I mean, you know, it's no reason to cry over spilled
milk. It's
Millet
playoff
now.
Edition of the Blitz.
They interviewed the coach Garrett, and he said you can't blame that on. You can't blame that. He says he thought it was a catch, but you can't blame the game on that. And I do think that's probably realistic. All right, let's see. I do have your weather for you right here. And a little bit of AccuWeather. Kelly O'Connell at 641-523-1450 to call in if you have some feelings about that non-catch.
Here's the AccuWeather.com forecast for El Paso today. We're going to have times of clouds and sunshine with a high temperature of 59 degrees. It's going to be a beautiful day. As we take a look into tonight, we're going to have an overnight low of 34 degrees. It's going to be mainly cloudy. If you have any other plans, I recommend bottling up before you head out. And with the AccuWeather.com extended outlook, mostly cloudy conditions, but we do not expect any precipitations for the next work week. However, the temperatures are going to start slowly rising until they reach the lower 60s for the next weekend.
I can barely understand that guy's voice, but it said something about fog in El Paso, so I didn't see any fog driving down here this morning. Here is a little more, well, let's, why don't we try a little bit of comedy here. This is a guy by Scott Wood. I'm trying to bring up comedians that you may not have heard of before. This is Scott Wood, and this is from a clip called Messed Up Childhood. Kelly O'Connell, 642-523-1450. Check this out, and then we're going to go to break.
I want to be a good dad, though, you know? I don't want to say some of the stuff my parents said to me when I was a kid, because if you're over 30, you know what I'm talking about. Remember some of the stuff your mom and dad would say to you when you were a kid? Remember that? My mom would yell so loud at me, my ears would bleed. Right? Then they'd say, did you hear me? You were like, dude, Helen Keller heard you. And you thought your mom was senile, too, didn't you? Because 10 times a day your mom says, what did I just say? 8 years old, you're thinking, look, woman, if you don't remember, I'm not telling you. My mom says, do I look like a bank? You know, well, you are a large woman. Oh, they come up with these questions. There's that one question your mom or dad, they'll ask you, but you never answer because they'll smack your face, right? My mom looks at me, she says, do I look stupid? And my sister's in the bedroom, it's a trick question, don't do it! Run!
Kelly here, and I've got a little clip for you, Oregon versus Ohio. Now, who are you picking in this game if you're following this? A lot of people have said that it's Oregon in a cakewalk, but don't forget Oregon lost the number one receiver, Devin Allen, who was the 110-meter champion, the 110-hurdle champion as a freshman, considered to be the fastest player in college football, and is a white kid, believe it or not. Did you know there have been a large number of black athletes that have gone under 10 seconds flat in the 100 meters, and there's only one white guy, and he's running right now. His name is Christophe Lemaitre. He's French, believe it or not. But this kid, Devin Allen, is a special player. He was lost, and now they've lost another one, Darren Carrington, who he scored two touchdowns in the semifinals, and now he's out. Why? Because of violating the rules. He smoked marijuana. I'm telling you, if you've ever been to Oregon, I'm not defending drug use, but I mean, you couldn't find a better place to grow pot. Anyway, here's a preview of the Oregon versus Ohio State National Championship, which is tonight. You got to watch it.
Throw it. Touchdown, Ohio State. Mario, perfect strike. Touchdown.
The party is just beginning in New Orleans as a celebration. Ohio State and their fans will take to the streets of New Orleans and back in Columbus as well. Five winners over Alabama at the Sugar Bowl. Hello again, everybody. Ray Crawford here with Doug Chapman, and now we have our combatants for the national championship in the college football playoff. Oregon beating Florida State earlier today in the Rose Bowl, followed by Ohio State's win here over Alabama. So I guess the question to you, Doug, as you look at this matchup, what are your first thoughts about the Buckeyes and Ducks next week?
You've got two complete football teams. You've got two teams that can line up and smash you. They can run the ball on you. They've got good quarterbacks. Actually, Mariota won the Heisman. Cardale Jones came out and played extremely well. You've seen two games with him. You've got teams that can push the pace. They can really move the ball at will on anybody they want. You watched a Ohio State team come out tonight and move the ball at will against one of the nation's best defenses. You watch an Oregon Ducks team line up and just beat up on Florida State on both sides of the football. You've got two similar teams. They can run fast on the perimeter. They've got big guys in the box. They've got great running backs, and they've got quarterbacks that can make plays. It's going to be a fantastic football game.
Ohio State and Oregon, these are both teams that put up a lot of points. Do you foresee a big offensive matchup here, or do you think this is going to be a more of a low-scoring defensive-type game?
These are two teams that take whatever the defense gives them. Mm-hmm. If they take away the deep ball, then they can line up and run it. Marcus Mariota, to me, brings that added dimension because he can pull it down and be a legitimate weapon when he pulls the football down. Cardale Jones can move, but he's nowhere near the athlete that Marcus Mariota is. So that's going to be the difference maker. Can they contain the read option when Mariota decides to keep it and turns that corner and turns into a 4-3-4, 4-4-40 type of guy that gets around the edge that turns into a running back in space? That's going to be the difference maker. They've got guys all over the field. They can throw it. They can run it. Defensively, they can stop you. You saw they shut down Amari Cooper. They held the running check. They got after Blake Sims. Both teams get after the quarterback. You saw what Oregon was able to do to Jameis Winston. The difference maker is going to be Marcus Mariota and the plays he makes when everything else around him breaks down.
This Sugar Bowl here tonight, I mean, Alabama left here kind of battered and bruised. There are going to be a lot of guys in treatment. So a very physical game.
We saw an Oregon team that played extremely physical as well. Were you surprised a little bit by that, and do you think this is going to be a very smash-mouth type of game?
Oregon played very angry today.
Yeah.
They played like a team that had a chip on their shoulder. They came out up front, and they got physical with Florida State. In the red zone, they got very physical. The secondary wasn't allowing the underneath routes. They were hitting the receivers, coming up, jarring the ball loose. And you saw the same thing tonight. We sat and watched this game with Ohio State. We watched field level. We saw they were just as physical or more physical on almost every play than Alabama, wasn't it? You watched it earlier. It looked like they were feeling Alabama out. And then they said, you know what, we can play with these guys. And they came out, finished that second half pretty strong, first half pretty strong, went in during halftime and came out with a whole new attitude. And they took it to Alabama. Alabama was playing catch-up the whole rest of the game.
You can put up over 500 yards against this defense
and
for Alabama.
Over 200 rushing by one guy. Ezekiel
unbelievable.
Fantastic.
They can play with anybody in the country, as clearly stated here in this game tonight. Well, it's on to North Texas, my friend, for the national championship game. Oregon and Ohio State coming up on the 12th. Coverage continues here on CampusInsiders.com.
All right, so that's just a little taster for you, but Oregon has this approach that is called the next man up, which is kind of a military idea almost. It's like there's no one person on the team that's the most important, that people play and they do substitutions to keep people fresh. It's a high-speed, high-paced game, and if somebody gets injured, then they just replace it with the next man. Now, Ohio has been overlooked all year, and they've got something to prove. It's going to be a great game. There's two high-powered offenses. A little bit more Sun Volt here, and then I'll take you out with some ads, and then we'll come back and finish her up and talk a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East.
Bring it now to the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee,
here,
Richard.
And I've got I think I've got enough time here to play for you a clip from Senator Burr, who is the head of the Senate's Intelligence Committee. I'm gonna set the table for you on this, because I think what we're talking about in Paris is not an attack on Europe. It's not an attack on France, not an attack on Europe. It's an attack on the West and everything that we stand for. Check this clip out.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for joining us. You've heard the French ambassador. You've heard the attorney general and our experts here right now. From your perch as chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, what's the most important threat you're seeing coming in right now?
Well, George, I think that the thing that worries me the most right now is the buzz on social media, whether it comes from a specific group like ISIS or whether it's just on the chat rooms. The target is to just go out and kill law enforcement and other officials. And I think, as some of your guests have displayed, especially Ray Kelly, that's a very difficult thing to detect. And I think that we're going to be spending weeks and months taking some of what we've learned from this attack in France and tracking down leads that hopefully get us in front of a terrorist act, and we're able to thwart it, whether it's in Europe or whether it's here in the United States.
You've actually warned that you're worried that these attacks in Europe could become a weekly event.
Well, I think certainly that's a tempo that we could reach, given the number of folks who have gone in and out of Syria. And now we're learning the extent of how much they went into places like Yemen early on. So, I think we're going to learn a lot more as time goes on. This is an event that continues to unfold from a standpoint of intelligence. And I think what we've got to do is be vigilant at home to make sure we keep in place those tools that give us the ability to triage that data in a way that we can track down anybody here in the U.S.
That's what I want to ask you about, because you heard the chair of British intelligence, Andrew Parker, say he doesn't think they have the capabilities to match the threat. The attorney general said, no, right now we do. Your opinion?
Well, I think that we're stretched. We're the best in the world, both from an intelligence gathering capacity and from a standpoint of a law enforcement capacity. But, George, let's be realistic. The French have many more tools from a standpoint of law enforcement, how they can detain people, the interrogations they can put three people through, than we do in the United States. So to believe that this slipped through with the massive surveillance that they have and the ability to get inside of really the terrorist element in France, they were unable, and this slipped through.
You've also criticized the president, saying his language does not adequately convey how severe the threat is from terrorism. What is he failing to say or do?
Well, listen, George, I give the attorney general credit. He used the word war this morning. I'm not sure he meant to. But when you look around the world, whether it's in Yemen, whether it's in Syria, whether it's in Iraq, whether it's in Afghanistan or in North Africa with Boko Haram, we've got terrorist elements that are carrying out terrorist acts. And if you put that collection together, what you've got is a war on Western civilization. It really doesn't matter which terrorist group we insert into the blank. The commitment is that they're out to kill innocent people. And whether it happens in Paris or London or New York, we've got to collectively do our best to make sure that we thwart those attacks.
Finally, sir, let me ask you also about this potential prosecution of General David Petraeus.
All right, so that's what I wanted you to hear on this. It's a war against civilization, which means that it is a war against us. It's you and I. Now, this kind of moves it beyond the partisan, the Democrat-Republican level. It takes it up a notch. And so the question then is, are we at risk here in the United States for these similar attacks? The answer to that is, of course, we are. We've already seen them. There's a tendency to live in a bubble and to think, well, I'm not at risk because, you know, I'm living in the safest country in the world. We can't say that anymore. And because of that, we've got to be on our toes. I think we do need to kind of update our theories for how to deal with this stuff. And this is we're not pre-9/11, and we've got to adapt to this situation. I'll take you out here with a little more Scott Wood, Messed Up Childhood. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 on the break of the hour.
Where's my eye? We got spanked when we were kids. Most of us got spanked, didn't we? Sure, man. You know, we turned out okay, I think. Kids don't get spanked anymore. If you're a kid nowadays, you can commit murder. You know what you get for punishment? Murder. Oh, you're on timeout. Are you familiar with this? Have you heard of timeout? That's ridiculous. In my house, timeout meant how long I was unconscious. That's right. That's what we had. Time out. We had lights out. That's what we had. Lights out. My dad would jump.
Good morning, it's Kelly. It is the 12th of January, 2015, and it's 7:06. And I got a few local stories, state stories for you. And there was kind of an interesting story out there that said that they've photographed a very rare ice halo, which is, I guess, a very rare phenomenon. And I think that was on National Geographic. A very, very strange story. Police officer reported shot in Albuquerque, New Mexico, January 9. Albuquerque police say an officer has been shot near a busy intersection on southeastern edge of town. And, all right, there is a little bit more to this story, which I've got to kind of track down for you. It's my understanding that a police officer shot an undercover officer. which is kind of a strange thing, and that the guy's been in surgery three times already. Here's a little bit on a coach, New Mexico high school basketball coach killed in crash.
A well-known Eastern New Mexico high school coach was tragically killed today. Curry County deputies say Elida girls basketball coach J.D. Isler died in a car crash on NM-209. They say his pickup crossed the center line and hit a semi. The semi driver was also seriously hurt. The Portales News Tribune says Isler's career spans nearly three decades, including coaching at New Mexico Women's College, Corpus High School, and the University of Texas at Arlington.
So that's sad news. Here is New Mexico lottery scholarships will no longer cover 100% of tuition.
The right numbers come out at the right time. But every time you do play, you're helping pay for a lot of our kids to go to in-state colleges and universities through the lottery scholarship. However, students and parents who rely on that scholarship and its coverage just got a number they were not expecting at the worst time.
Sure, our younger generations might be a little too attached to their phones and computers, but it's a good thing Rachel Marchand had the urge to double-check her email inbox Tuesday. How else would the UNM sophomore have known?
I had no inkling of knowing that there was going to be a drop in the lottery scholarship.
That if she wanted to go back to class this spring semester, she was going to have to pay a little more. And oh yeah,
I wasn't informed until 5 days before.
That's because UNM and any other New Mexico college or university didn't find out about the lottery scholarship award reduction until this past December. So instead of awarding 100% of the average tuition cost this spring semester, our State Department of Higher Education announced only 95% would be covered. Our lawmakers did add money to the scholarship program last legislative session, but it's your typical case of supply and demand. Too many kids qualifying, not enough money to go around.
95% is still a very high number, but I don't think anyone was anticipating that it would be short for the spring already.
Rachel and her mom, Lorna, sure weren't. They won't take a huge hit per se, about 50 extra bucks a semester, but still.
We pay out of pocket close to $1,000 a semester for fees and books and assorted other charges, and you know, that's probably a huge hardship for many New Mexico families, particularly in this economy.
For sure. Now, UNM was able to cover the difference for half its lottery scholarship students, primarily those who have a financial need, and then those with university scholarships. That 95%.
Anyway, it's just that you might be interested in that. Now, here is another story on this one is a former supervisor reacting to shooting of undercover detective from KOBE, but there was a police officer who was shot by another officer, and that police officer was didn't know he was shooting an undercover agent, and apparently he did not attend the briefings on this undercover activity. So, and let me see here. Got this kind of strange little situation here. All right. Let's go to break here for just a second. I'm going to have to find this on another news site because these ads are kind of getting stuck. But anyway, here is a little bit more Sunvolt, tear-stained eye. It's from Austin City Limits Live. Kelly O'Connell, listening to Alt Country this month, 523-1450 to call in, and we're going to come back, talk a little more about New Mexico, and then we're going to discuss international terrorism, the threat of a home attack, and I'm going to be looking at that all week. At 7:12 on the 12th of January.
Walking down Main Street, getting to know the concrete, looking for a purpose from the outside. I would meet you anywhere. nothing greater, nothing more than the traveling hands of time. Saint Genevieve can hold back the water. Saints don't bother with tears stained.
Kelly here, 717. And I've got a few local stories here for you front page news. Local woman gets kidney transplant after 3-year wait, recovering now after complications. NL Lettisman, 29. And county commissioner picked representatives for various panels at the meeting on Tuesday. And I might get some a little bit of Ben's input on that. Ben Rawson. Now, here's an interesting claim. Oh, there's a couple of them here. Las Cruces City Council is going to discuss the downtown plaza and the possibility of converting church and water into two-way streets. What do you think about that personally? I think it'd be a good idea because, I don't know, one-way streets are very convenient, but sometimes they're very inconvenient at the same time. All right, there's a senator, the bishop is saying a Catholic church in downtown Las Cruces is a possibility. All right, here's a senator, Senator Mary Kay Papin, sent a recent letter mentioning the possibility of the departure of La Frontera, them leaving the state, and of course La Frontera is saying that's absolutely not true, so we'll have to keep our eye on that. All right, here's from that story about the undercover agent getting shot by a cop.
We're here to provide you with an update as to the officer involved shooting, which occurred yesterday. The investigation continues, and the information is still very limited as our investigators from our multi-jurisdictional shooting task force continues to do the interviews. I first want to thank the community. The community has reached out to the Albuquerque Police Department and to the families. And I can tell you that it's overwhelming for the families, and it's overwhelming for us too. The undercover detective who was shot yesterday remains in critical condition. His condition has not changed. They took him in for another surgery just moments ago. The family has asked us to ask you not to disclose the undercover detective's name.
Okay.
All right, so that is, man, another shooting up there. They've got a task force for shooting. Now they're shooting their own, which we did have that shooting down at the hotel off London. Now here is, in case you haven't heard about it, here's a little bit more about the shooting itself from KOAT.
These men and women go out every day. They risk their lives, and this is just another example, an all-too-frequent example of how dangerous police work can be.
The Albuquerque Police Department is dealing with the unthinkable tonight. A detective is fighting for his life after being shot by another officer during an undercover drug operation. Sky 7 was first over the scene today. Both of the officers in today's incident were in plain clothes when the shots were fired at Central and Tramway. A shooting like this is sometimes referred to as blue-on-blue, when one officer shoots another. Right now, that detective who was shot is in critical condition. We have live team coverage. Matt Howerton is at UNM Hospital, where the officer was taken after the shooting. But first, let's go to Megan Cruz. She's live where it happened earlier today.
Well, Royal, as you can see, there's no longer any signs that the shooting even took place here. There's no police tape. The McDonald's is open, but it's right here over my left shoulder. That is where this terrifying shooting took place.
It was just before noon when an Albuquerque police detective was shot at this McDonald's on Central Avenue near Tramway. Sky 7 flew over the scene just minutes after it happened. Albuquerque police say the detective was shot not by a suspect, but rather...
The preliminary investigation shows that the detective was shot by another Albuquerque Police Department officer.
APD says the officers were working together on an undercover narcotics operation. They would not go into the details of this friendly fire incident, but sources tell us the wounded officer was not wearing a bulletproof vest. He was taken to UNM Hospital in critical condition. Investigators placed evidence markers around several vehicles in the McDonald's parking lot. Those vehicles were later towed away for further analysis. We spoke to several people who witnessed the moments immediately after the shooting. This man says the officer's injuries looked
pretty bad. Pretty bad. I've seen a gunshot to his stomach and to his chest.
This man's sister says another officer at the scene looked like he was in shock.
He was holding his head like in disbelief, and he kept pacing back and forth.
Mayor Richard Berry was with the officer's family today. He has one request of the community.
Keep the officer in your prayers. Keep the entire department in your prayers.
Sources tell us the wounded officer has been with the department for 10 years. A chaplain is with the family at the hospital. Live in Albuquerque tonight, Megan Clues, KOAT, Action 7 News.
APD says Tucson.
That's incredible. And I saw another article on the KOB website. I can't find it now. That said that these guys were, that the cop that shot the undercover officer did not go to the meeting to discuss the undercover, operation. So here's what I want to know, just out of curiosity. Somebody's got to answer this. You've got an undercover cop. They've already stated, obviously, doesn't have his bulletproof vest on. He ends up getting shot in this sting. Are you telling me that he pulled a gun on the police officer that shot him, or the detective that shot him, or did the detective just shoot him? I mean, how do you? Anyway, they need a shooting. They need somebody to discuss this because it's pretty crazy. All right. Now, let's shift gears here. I'm looking over. Well, let me read a few more headlines for you. The main headline is that they say Obama let the world down by not showing up to not sending anybody prominent to this march against Islam. Why would he not do that? And for those of you 523-1450 that are still defending Obama and still supporting him, Frankie, what's the excuse? I mean, there's like this excuse machine that is used for the White House's activities, and no matter what happens, there's always an explanation. And the explanation always sounds like an excuse. It always sounds like a defense attorney taking the facts from the case and putting it together in the best way possible, and yet the explanation never really add up, do they? There would be no reason that Obama or Biden or John Kerry or somebody of that stature wouldn't fly over there. It's not like the president is afraid to spend money on airlines. All right, here's some headlines for you. Obama amnesty costs state billions of dollars. Of course it will. Documents reveal plan to limit detentions, arrests, deportations of border crossers. Agents are now trained as social workers, not law enforcement. A Saudi prince says $100 a barrel oil will never occur again. But they're also talking about, this is a frequent conversation in the oil industry, how the Saudis were using lowering prices to put frackers and slant drillers out of business in America to drive the price back up, to put us out of business, and to bring the cost back up. Study: men who post selfies online show psychopathic tendencies. Men if you're taking selfies and putting them on online, you might want to go talk to a psychologist. You might be a little bit nuts. Bush-Romney rivalry goes back decades, and Romney was the Massachusetts governor. He ran for senator. You know, Romney has lost a lot more races than he's won, I'll tell you that. Could be a brutal fight. Now, for those of you who don't know, I lived in the state where Jeb Bush was the governor. I'm convinced he's more conservative than his brother, George W. He's applying the lessons from his Florida run, 20-year journey towards the middle ground. I don't know if he's in the middle ground. I hope if he gets elected, he's not just another moderate. That's the death of the movement. Small band of moderate Dems could be key to the GOP's success, and here's how this could play out. All right, we've got a fight right now for Keystone. Now, look at it from not from a right or wrong issue, but look at it from a survival angle. The senators and congresswomen who've carried water for Obama, for Obamacare and other things that he's done, have had an incredible mortality rate. We've got 2/3 of the people that supported Obamacare out of the Congress now. So if you're a U.S. senator and the GOP comes up and says, you know, say you're a Democratic senator, the GOP comes up and says, back us on the Keystone Pipeline, which is, you know, we've been fighting about this for like 10 years now or 8 years, whatever. Obama's totally opposed to it. The people on the far left totally opposed to it, even though there's no credible scientific support for the idea that it's a danger to the environment anymore. But if you're a U.S. senator and you look around and you see all of the people who have been kind of basically killed off by supporting Obama, you don't care if the president supports this or not. As a matter of fact, to survive in office, you want to say, not only did I oppose the president, but I supported the Keystone Pipeline for U.S. energy, blah, blah, blah. And I think people who vote against the Keystone Pipeline are putting their careers at risk, because people in general are over Obama's agenda. They might still like him personally. His support is 45-48%, but this is political survival. And you got to remember, for a lot of these politicians, the only thing important in their life is their political career. So, all right. Harvey Weinstein compares Paris terrorists to Nazis. He's a filmmaker, film producer. Martin Luther King Jr.'s children fighting over the ability to sell his Nobel Peace Prize and his Bible. Interestingly enough, rampaging camel kills two at animal sanctuary. Egypt student gets 3-year jail term for atheism. Atheism is against the law in Islam. Okay. Now let's take a little break here. Here's a little more Scott Wood, messed up childhood.
We always got spanked too, man. Remember how dumb we were? We'd go get them the belt. Wasn't that stupid? Kind of a kid, you know, go get my belt. All right. I'm pushing my sister out of the way. I'm getting the belt. I'm a moron. My dad was crazy with the spankings, though, man. But we got spanked a lot, man. Me, my sisters, we got spanked so much we'd sit around the house singing, "Ain't no whooping like the one I got." Hey. We were the Caucasian Temptations. That's what we were, you know. I got whoopings.
Let us, by the way, there was a Bloomberg Business Week article, proof that college football refs are riddled with bias. Now, they've got more betting going on than any, college football game ever. The record was $119 million. They're getting a lot of $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 bets on this game, although nothing over six figures. But an Oregon as Oregon and Ohio State prepare to fight for the championship, a new study shows that referees are biased towards the home team based on a complex, and a quote here, based on a complex analysis of penalty yards assessed over the course of 8 seasons done by the professors at Miami University of Ohio and Florida State University. It suggests, for example, that the ACC and Big 12 refs tend to penalize home teams less during games between conference rivals. And these and other examples of bias indicate, quote, considerable variance in officiating across conferences. And but this is not a conspiracy. They say this is not a conspiracy between referees. This is just a natural tendency to favor the home team, apparently. Now, let's all right, let's go on here. Eric, this is from the New York Daily News. Eric Holder, top U.S. officials and no-show at Paris Unity Rally. And here's just the first paragraph. U.S. Attorney General in Paris for a terrorism summit with French President Francois did not join world leaders such as German Chancellor Angela Merkel, British Prime Minister David Cameron, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and a Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. The leader of the Palestinians shows up and we don't show up? You've got to be kidding. That is just so shameful. Why wouldn't we at least send, I mean, if Eric Holder is over there, and I'm trying to see if he is. Oh, you know what? Eric Holder, get this. It's even worse. Eric Holder is in France, and he doesn't show up for this. Can you believe that? All right. I've really got too much to go over today, but I just want to say that there is a war against the West. I've got a clip here. I told you that I would play the clip from this guy. This guy and his brother went over to Yemen. This guy was in prison. They say he got radicalized in prison. This is in French, so I'm just going to play a little bit of it for you. But he recorded this video before he went out and killed people and got himself killed in the name of Allah. Allah Akbar. All right, here it is.
Je m'adresse tout d'abord au calife des musulmans.
First of all, I address myself to the Caliph of Muslims, to the Guard of Heaven, Caliph Ibrahim. I pledged allegiance to the Caliphate as soon as the Caliphate was declared. Now, the Caliphate is ISIS, is what he's referring to. The Caliphate was a leadership that came out of ancient Islam. And they say the true Caliphate really only lasted a short period of time. There was the Umayyad and the Abbasid dynasties, which went on for a couple hundred years after Muhammad, and then they fell apart, and there never has been a caliphate again, a true, what they consider to be true leadership by truly righteous Muslim leaders that are the leadership in the name of Allah, Sharia law, although they claim that Turkey was, until Turkey fell, that has never been accepted by the majority of Muslims. But here this guy is pledging himself to ISIS. Now, here, this is why it's extremely ill-advised for somebody like Howard Dean to get up and say, I do not consider these people to be religious. They're not doing this in the name of religion. It's just a cult. Excuse me? Howard Dean, you know more about Islam than the people that are believers? Step back a bit, please. You know, here's a little bit more.
De la déclaration du califat. Les frères... Notre équipe divisée en deux.
The brothers of our team divided into two, they attacked Charlie Hebdo. While I went out against the police. So there you go. We acted together and sometimes separately so it would have more of an impact.
Donc voilà, on a fait les choses un petit peu ensemble, un petit peu séparés. C'était plus pour que ça ait plus d'impact. Quoi. J'ai aidé dans son...
I helped him with his project by donating a few thousand euros so he could buy what he needed to do.
Quelques milliers d'euros pour qu'il finisse à boucler ce qu'il avait acheté.
Then we synchronized our plans so we were all going out at the same time so that nobody has any problems. What we're doing is totally legitimate in light of what you're doing. It's vengeance.
C'est tout à fait légitime, vu ce qu'ils font. Vengeance du prophète sallam, mashallah.
There has been ample justification for a long time. You attack the caliphate or you attack ISIS, we're attacking you. ISIS is the group. They're establishing an Islamic state. That is the caliphate. And a caliph is the leader. It's the righteous leader. It is the accepted righteous leader of the group. The caliph is the head of the caliphate or the Muslim state.
Vous attaquez l'État islamique. On vous attaque.
So you're playing the victim as if you don't understand what is happening over a few dead people.
Ne pas attaquer et ne rien avoir en retour. Alors vous faites votre victime comme si vous ne comprenez pas ce qui se passe pour quelques morts. Or que vous et votre coalition.
While you and your coalition, with you heading it, regularly bombard over there. So anyway, I'm not going to play any more of this, but you get a feel for where he's going with this. Now, this same guy headbutted his neighbor because he didn't like the music that they were playing when he was living over in this street where this Muslim activity was organized. Now, it is, wow, this is so interesting. 523-1450. So this is, what if this is organized at a higher level, I think, because this guy and his brother went into Yemen to get trained. So a couple of questions here to be answered. Number one is there a conspiracy going on that is not just regional but is international? And my response to that is going to be, of course, they've got more plans than just for Paris. And there is some warning, and I've got Senator Feinstein here that is saying that France has declared war to rid the country of terrorists, but she also claims that there are sleeper cells, just like in France, over here. And let's take a little break here, a little more Sunvolt, and take you out on a break. Kelly O'Connell, KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back. All right, here's a clip from Senator Dianne Feinstein about France, but also the possibility that sleeper cells are over here. And this is from, I'm not sure what news this is from, but here we go.
Something that was chilling. He said that the world should be prepared for a possible mass casualty attack. What's your read on that? You see these intelligence reports. Do you feel the same way?
Well, as far as I know, after looking at the reports I've seen, there is no credible, defined threat of that. I think this is within the realm of possibility. I think we're in an all-out situation. France has declared war. What that means, I'm not quite sure, but we're going to see.
Well, what's an appropriate response then if they've declared war? What's the retaliation?
That's not for me to decide. That's for France to decide. But I think what they're saying is that there will be a unified national effort to rid the country of terrorists. And that's difficult to do because they're deeply embedded. I think there are sleeper cells not only in France, but certainly in other countries, and yes, even in our own. So I think this calls for vigilance. It calls for seeing that the national security organizations of our country, the intelligence community, is funded fully, is directed ably, is cooperating with whether it be British intelligence, French intelligence, German intelligence.
All right, you heard her say that. Now, Senator Feinstein is no overreactor part of the left, but she's always been prominent in terms of defense. I mean, she's somebody who's was upset at the NSA for snooping on senators. And now we've got various statements in the past on terrorism. Now, let me ask you this. Now, somebody had called in and said that they thought that what we should do is if anybody's involved in terrorism, you don't just get rid of them, you get rid of their whole family back to wherever they came from. I think that goes without saying. I think that's a good idea. Now, in addition to that, do you start deporting people who came from terrorist nations, Yemen, and wherever you find that there's terrorist activities, you're going to immediately say that's un-American or that's un-European or un-American. But what are our options? I mean, we need to go back and just kind of discuss what our options are. Here's a little bit from Charles Krauthammer on the level of attack. These are organized waves, according to him.
And syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer. Charles, your thoughts on this day and where we stand as this hunt continues.
Look, I think what's so important about this is the origin of the four killers, the brothers and the couple. They are born in France. I think we're now in sort of the third stage of the jihadist war against us. The first, of course, is 9/11. All of the attackers were from the Middle East. And then for the last year or two, we have seen the lone wolf attacks, usually homegrown, but fairly unstable and one-on-one, and looks as if fairly disorganized or acting out of inspiration, but not on instruction or with training. Here we have perhaps the beginning of the third wave, the third stage, and this is the trained local cells who have learned their trade in the Middle East, are connected in some way, as we heard the 50 calls among the two groups here, and the obvious connection with Al-Qaeda in Yemen. And this, I think, is going to be, it's as if there's a critical mass of these dissident jihadists in the West who are now in a position, rather than act like the single guy in Australia or single guys acting separately in Canada as a group, as a cell, and as an organized wave. And that could be what we're facing right now.
Well, I mean, I would argue that it is what we're facing, but what is it going to look like? So when people,
Goldman Sachs,
let's just say, worst case scenario, people start coming out of the woodwork and killing Americans in these style of attacks,
trio
what
of
is going to be the
some
response?
Of our most...
What are we going to do about it? You might say, well, Kelly, what can we do about it? Well, we're talking about it right now. Are you going, and we've got a phone call right here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Morning, Kelly. This is Jake.
Hey, Jake, what's going on?
Hey, Kelly, I just wanted to mention something. I've been kind of waiting a while to actually mention this on the radio, but I'm not going to tell you the error or anything, but I did see a Muslim or Islam person one day passing in front of the area where I live, and I know for a fact that this guy was not out there sightseeing or anything, but he was driving by himself, and he had a camera at the window, and I saw this very, very specifically, and he was taking pictures as he was going by. And I know for a fact he's a Muslim descent or whatever type person,
okay,
because I deal with a lot of people like that, but he was taking pictures. I think they're mapping the land, different areas, but I saw this individually do that. On Michael Savage, they said that he said that Obama is letting in over 1,000 Muslims a month. In.
Well, you know what I mean? This all goes back to the intention of Obama. Why doesn't Obama or one of his cabinet go to this march against Islamic terrorism?
Well, very evident, because he supports them. He's not going to go against them because, I don't know, he's in fear of them, for one, because they can take him out real fast, and that's what they will anyways. They're going to they'll do that to him anyways. But he just thinks that he's supporting them by not
there's no way. You know, it's not like they couldn't get a flight over here. You know, he's got his own airline, his own airplane. And, I mean, here's the bizarre thing is that Eric Holder was in France when this happened. So it was a conscious decision to not attend this march against Islamic terrorism. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Of course, no, it doesn't make sense. None of this makes sense. The only sense that is put in this is because they just want to get as many people from that from the Muslim descent in here, and their plan is to get things going so bad against us to turn all the regular Muslims, the moderate Muslims, against us also. So they're just trying to stir up enough where they can turn everybody against us. That's their plan.
Well, I mean, it's just, it's very discouraging. Now, let me ask you this kind of devil's advocate question. How do you know that this guy wasn't driving down the road and taking pictures for his girlfriend or trying to find a, you know, he's looking for an address that he was trying to find?
Exactly. You know, that's why it took a while, you know, just to even mention this, because it sounds kind of crazy but and outlandish, but I noticed that he was trying to be inconspicuous about what he was doing. He had the camera to the window, and he was not driving slow, like looking at areas like a normal person would take pictures of areas that would be nice. He was taking pictures, and I know he was taking pictures of my certain area for certain things that I don't want to mention right now, but I know that he was taking pictures of areas, and he was just doing it on a drive-by thing and not slowing down. He was keeping his speed up, and I saw this, and I saw his face, and I saw his eyes. And I know he was a Muslim. I know he was from that descent. And, you know, I've always had the feelings about these people like that in certain areas and reasons it has to do with what I have or whatever. But I know this gentleman was doing that. I've always had an intuition like that. I usually write about that. But I saw this gentleman doing that. And, you know, I that's the first thing that came to my mind. I had that feeling, that gut feeling. So I know that he was not just going around taking pictures of nice areas.
Interesting, very interesting. Did you call the police or did you call the FBI?
No, of course not. I didn't want to. What are they going to do? They're going to say, we can't.
If I try to put you on hold, don't fight me. This is Kelly. I'll be right back.
Keep feelings of things like that.
Jake, we're running out of time. Anything else?
No, sir. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty.
Yeah. Okay, Patty, go ahead.
Yeah, I told you last week when you hung up on me that there were terrorists here, jihadists, since 2012. They've been here in El Paso.
Patty,
and
I understand. The reason I didn't mean to hang up on you, but I was trying to interrupt you, let you know that I had to go to a break and you wouldn't stop talking. I didn't mean to hang up on you. I just had to take a break.
Okay.
Nothing personal, of course.
Well, I'm
so
just
anyway,
confirming
Patty,
what Jake said.
Patty, let me ask you this, just briefly. If we're going to change how we do things to protect ourselves, what changes do you suggest?
Well, we need to close the borders, I guess. Probably the start.
What about the people that are here already?
We can't go around door to door and asking people what ethnicity they are.
No, I mean,
like Jake said, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, this is nothing to do with ethnicity. There are white people and there's Mexican people and Asian people in this country that are Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look, I'm bringing this topic up so we can discuss it. I don't even know what the answer is. But I know that if there are sleeper cells in here, like Feinstein said, and a lot of other people, we've got to have an answer.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something, too. Minutes before that attack in Paris, on the 7th of January last week, there was an announcement on Capitol Hill from several congressmen who are no longer there. Bob Graham is one of them, and I'll have to look up the others. There was an announcement made. There's 28 pages of the 9/11 report that are missing, and they want them disclosed. So that happened minutes before that attack.
Interesting. Patty, I'm running out of time. I got a couple minutes of ads, but let's talk about this tomorrow. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Welcome back. All right, folks. We'll be right back. Take a little break here. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in.
Looking to get refrigerated.
It's Kelly here, and by the way, I'm not advocating throwing anybody out of the country unless it's proved that they're involved with terrorism or they've somehow sourced to terrorism. The answer to our problem is not to throw everybody out who's come from the Middle East. The answer, though, is to come up with a plan. I don't know what the plan looks like, but we can't have a plan unless we talk about it. Here's something from the Canadian PM, Stephen Harper. International jihadist movement has declared war.
A trio of hooded men struck.
Actually, we don't. I'll just save this for tomorrow. We don't quite have time for this right now. Well, anyway, thanks for listening in. I'm going to do a whole week on homicide terrorism. And that's Blog Talk Radio. If you want to listen to the show, then go to Blog Talk Radio and look up Kelly O'Connell, and you can get this whole show.